He offered Giles back his weapons.
Damn near went to Davy there.
They're yours. I won't stand beholden to no man.
No man walks naked on the Gibraltar. Don't fuck with me or I'll toss you back.
Bear Stephen. Owe ya.
No, you owe me. Where's your ship?
Sunk. Bunch of outlanders got the Delta Blue. Fuckers had rapid fires, grins, blasts, you name it.
Although intrigued, Bachman managed to control his reaction. He'd heard such tales before. Outlanders with nuke batteries, MRE packs, whiskey, nukes, airplanes, all sorts of crap. He was too old to believe in lost tech and a world beyond the last island.
Bullshit!
On my oath! Brass shells were everywhere from that little blaster. Rad me, I'd give me left nut to have them in my sights again. Draco was the best captain ever.
Until now.
Aye, skipper. But we got to make them pay.
Know where they harbor.
Cold.
Suddenly, Giles dropped the gourd. As it rolled away, he went slowly to the deck and lay slumped into a heap. Bachman put a finger on the man's throat.
Still breathing. Must be exhaustion and exposure. Smokey, haul our brother to my cabin. Wash him off, get some fresh clothes and a blaster, but no ammo.
Aye, Captain. Comfortable, but helpless.
Get him food, too. All he wants. A woman, I don't give a shit. If he says he can handle one when he wakes.
Done.
Everybody to your posts. Man the rigging, and watch for any other survivors. No work for a day to the swab that finds another.
The pirates swarmed into the ropes above, eagerly scanning the surface for any more wreckage or people. When the officers were alone, they spoke low and quickly.
What do you think, sir? Sounds legit to me. But outlanders with rapid fires.
It isn't impossible. Sure as shit didn't sound like a drunkard's boast. And if they knew a way in, by Davy's bones, they might just know the way out.
Touch of a knife up their arse will make 'em talk. Makes anybody talk.
For a while. And we know where they can be found. Cold must mean Cold Harborville.
Baron Langford. His ma gave me this scar here. Be happy to do the son of a bitch the same. But not gonna use a dull blade and only get half the job done.
You've been there. How good are their defenses?
Too good. Island got cliffs on every side. Only way to reach land is the main harbor. Ville has stone walls and lots of cannon.
And their gunners are good shots, so I hear from others who've tried to raid the island. Tried and failed.
Aye, sir. Must be a dozen ships lying at the bottom of that harbor. Almost as many as Maturo Island itself. One of them is me old ship, the Manatee.
A good vessel, and a smart captain.
The captain removed his hat and mopped the sweat off his face with a damp handkerchief. It was lace, and he swore he could still smell lilac flowers, a token from the chilled slut who'd made a child into a man and taught him the truth of the world. Trust nobody. His tanned skin, brown as dirt, Red Blade stood directly in the streaming sunlight, completely unaffected, as if he were carved from cool stone.
We can't risk a direct assault unless we get another ship to ride in first and draw their fire. Some newbie who doesn't know any better, and only wants to split the booty.
The Amsterdam, maybe, or the Cortez.
No, not those. But at least one more ship. Maybe a lot more.
100 miles away, 3 lifeboats floated along under the blistering sun, with oars out of the water. No movement, no sounds. Hungry seagulls circled the drifting boats, watching the motionless human forms lying inside the wooden shells. Nuzzling close to the skiffs, a shark swam alongside, patiently waiting for more food. Slumped over at the tiller, Doc held the hot wooden handle, a damp handkerchief draped over his head as protection. Scooping his hand into ocean for just a moment, he dribbled some more water on the cloth and waited for his shift to end. The rest of the companions lay on the bottom of the boat, sheltered by the shadows of their jackets. The other 2 lifeboats were pretty much the same, one man at the tiller, while the rest sought shade from the blistering sun. Rowing was done only at night. Only yesterday, they'd all grabbed an oar as the Oceanic River carried them directly toward Forbidden Island. They managed to break out of the current just in time, and then Ryan and JB's rad counters loudly indicated why the landmass was considered taboo. 20 miles away, the Geigers started clicking and quickly rose to an almost steady burr. Without the advance warning, they'd have sailed into a harbor ringed with green glass, the vaporized shadows of battleships cast on the half-melted rock of a tall mountain range. Twin volcanoes towered above everything, wisps of steam rising from the truncated peaks, the southern face lined with the flowing red river of molten lava working its way into the sea. There was a strong stink of sulfur. The chemical was often referred to as brimstone in his time, but apparently now it was called flash. The ruins of a pre-dark city rose behind the glowing harbor. The wealth of the ancient world was just waiting to be taken, protected by the deadly, invisible field of hard radiation. Figures could be seen moving among the ruins, and he wished the muties well to their cornucopia of technology. Dipping a hand into the water again, Doc jerked as he felt a brief contact with something rough, and he knew he'd just brushed against a shark. Gasping for breath, he waited for his heart to slow to normal again. The creature was still tracking them after 2 days. Its dorsal fin and body had several bullet holes from their blasters, but the creature had suffered no deleterious effects from the sudden infusion of subsonic lead. Mildred said the creatures had been on the endangered species list in her time.
I don't see how these adamantine killers could be in danger from anybody.
Her bearskin coat made into a tent with Doc's sword stick. Christy muttered something and rolled over, just as Doc caught a whiff of living plants in the wind. Shading his face, he looked about and saw an island on the horizon coming ever closer. A huge waterfall was visible even from this distance, falling from the slopes of cool, misty mountains that rose majestically over the jungle landscape. Formidable cliffs rose straight from the ocean, but to the north side there seemed to be a beach. Then the sharp, greasy aroma of frying fish arrived.
Land ho!
What? Huh?
Land!
Everybody shook themselves awake and struggled out from their impromptu shelters to blink at the blinding daylight.
Trouble?
On your left! Behold an island as green as Walden Pond.
Huh. Smell fish.
Holstering his piece, Ryan checked his lapel. The rad counter was silent.
Clean.
Same here. Dry land at last.
Is that it? Is that Cold Harbor?
Yes, we're home!
In the second boat, Jones smiled widely, causing his dry lips to crack.
Beautiful!
Ahoy, Cold Harbor!
Too far. Okay, slip to port. We gotta break out to the river, or head straight for Chang Island and Butcher Ratak.
Heave to, you swabs. Put your backs into it, unless you want to visit the Canny Baron.
Taking a seat with the other companions, Ryan and Mildred held their oars still, as Doc leaned hard into the tiller and the rest stroked deep and fast. The skiff sluggishly fought free from the underwater river once more, and slowed as it reached calm sea. Doggedly, the shark left the warm currents of the river and followed after the boats, its fin cutting the water as it circled eagerly, searching for more of the soft red food to fall into its massive jaws. An hour passed of steady rowing, the sun draining their strength and blistering exposed skin. A westerly breeze made the waves crest toward the skiffs so that it seemed as if the boats were traveling backward. But the green island came ever closer, and soon Ryan could see the defensive wall around the vill. 10 or more feet high, made of red brick, with several holes in the side. Probably for cannons. A lot of them. The smells of food and green plants soon masked the tang of the salty sea. And now they could see people moving on the shore and docks, sec men running along the top of the wall. There were several dugout canoes and a battered trawler at the dock, but Ryan was pleased to observe that there was nothing like the Constellation or the Delta Blue. The choppy water became suddenly smooth as they neared the island, and Ryan noted they were passing over an undersea reef of bright pink coral with natural breakers. The boats shot through without any trouble, but the persistent shark skirted away from the deadly sharp coral, swimming ruthlessly back and forth on the other side.
Baron Langford gonna shit when he hears about the constellation!
Screw him! If he hadn't been in such a rush for us to come back, we would have waited out the storm that damaged the Connie in the first place.
You gonna tell him that?
Hell no.
In the companion skiff, the rowing became slow, and the boat eased behind the others rushing for shore.
Don't like this.
The dock's clear. Almost like they're preparing for a fight.
Mildred glanced ahead at Jones, beaming with delight and waving at the Ville. She slipped an arm through the strap of her med kit to keep it close.
Something's wrong.
Suddenly, there was a puff of gray smoke from the back wall. A moment later, a geyser shot into the air near the front lifeboat.
Ambush!
Wait, maybe it's just a warning shot. They're traveling with Outlanders.
Yeah, us.
What in hell are you doing? I'm Jones, of the Constellation!
Why the fuck are they shooting? Don't they know it's us?
The Sekhmen know.
Christy stopped rowing completely. Briefly, she checked her weapon, loaded and oiled. The salt air was tough on steel, and JB made sure everybody used extra lube on their weapons. Now a line of blasters from the Ville shot cannonballs, impacting the water on every side of the three skiffs.
Getting our range.
Ryan glanced at the breakers, a good 10 minutes of rowing distance and well within the range of those huge cannons.
Fire blast!
Captain!
Fuck this! Head back to sea!
Quickly, people reversed their seating and started stroking for their lives. The lead lifeboat suddenly exploded into pieces, wood and bodies flying everywhere.
Jones!
Abigail covered her face, devastated. More smoke puffed from the Ville. A cannonball hit only feet away from the companion's boat, the waterspout going 10 feet high, completely hiding them.
Everybody overboard!
Ryan dropped his backpack and dove straight over the side. He hit the water in a clean dive, and cool silence engulfed the man as he kicked for the depths. The water was clear and barely stung his eye. He guessed that was from the fresh water of the big fall mixing with the ocean, diluting the salt. The sunlight streamed down to the bottom, and he could actually see the sandy floor of the harbor some 30 or so feet away. There were a lot of wrecked ships scattered about, schools of brightly colored fish darting about in the nautical graveyard. Ryan leveled off at about 10 feet above the derelict ships and checked for the others. His friends were close behind. Mildred swam awkwardly, hauling her med kit. Christy swam in spurts, her waterlogged coat lagging behind like a boneless corpse. Doc was fumbling in the water with both hands at something, then watched as his sword stick disappeared into the amassed wreckage below. Feeling his heart pound in his chest, Ryan pointed a finger, then jerked a thumb. Dean and Jack swam by as the women dropped their excess weight and also headed directly for shore. The only safe location from the cannons was at the base of the Ville wall, where the black powder blasters couldn't aim. Once on shore, the matter would be more in favor of the companions. Hissing a trail of bubbles, a cannonball shot through the group, and they faintly heard a muffled crackling of wood. Dean glanced back to see the wood and dark objects descend from the surface, blood spreading out from the limbs and torsos of the dead. The loss of the girls hit him harder than that of Jones for some reason, but then the strain in his lungs urged him onward, and he continued kicking to reach land. Then he caught a flash of gold amid the broken spars and ghostly rigging. Drawing a knife, the boy relaxed when he saw the gleaming bones of a skeleton half covered with barnacles, grinning blindly from the tilted crow's nest of a sunken vessel, a gold tooth reflecting the sunlight from above. Dean marked the location in his mind and rejoined the others, concentrating on staying calm and conserving his air supply. Surface now, and the Ville Sekhmen might see them in the clear water and be waiting for them on shore with blaster fire. An eerie peace enveloped the laboring group, the only sounds coming from the movements of their arms and legs. Each was alone in the world of his or her private thoughts as schools of tiny fish darted about without logic. The fields of broken ships abruptly stopped once the companions reached the shallows. With burning lungs, they immediately angled for the shadows underneath the wooden dock. From there, they could sneak onto the shore. But as the land rose, visibility dangerously increased to the point that they feared being spotted by armed SecMen who'd just aced their own incoming people. Waving gently in the currents, lacy fronds of seaweed reached for them from the seabed, the long tendrils of the plants the exact same color of the cigs the sailors smoked, but the companions steered well clear of the entangling plants. Sloping gently to shore, the shoals were covered with wide fields of oysters, their shells splayed open wide to catch the droppings of passing fish. Only a small section of the oysters were protectively closed against an invading starfish. Using its massively thick five arms, the bright yellow starfish was slowly forcing the dusky shells apart, despite the desperate struggles of the mollusk inside. Once the shell opened, the oyster would be helpless and the starfish would feed. Soon, the ancient concrete pillars supporting the dock came into view, more barnacles peppering the cracked columns, their tiny beards waving invitingly back and forth. Wasting vital moments going around a thick clump of seaweed, Ryan swam into the shadows and knifed eagerly upward. Upon reaching the surface, he covered his mouth and took only tiny sips of air through his nose so he wouldn't gasp loudly and announce their presence. The others rose in the strips of darkness and followed his example. Minutes passed before they dared to breathe normally. While the companions checked their weapons, Mildred hopefully studied the harbor, but couldn't spot any of the others in the skiffs. They appeared to be the only ones who made it to the shore alive.
Poor Abigail.
Christy and Jack drew their weapons, water trickling from the revolver's cylinders. The tough blasters would fire even underwater, but it wasn't recommended for long life. Ryan, Dean, and Mildred eased their blasters out of the water and patiently waited for them to dry. Unfortunately, Doc's black powder hand cannon had been rendered useless the moment he entered the water.